Hello and welcome to the Innovation Forum podcast for Friday 13th January with me, Ian Welsh. A few days ago, I spoke with Eleanor Spencer, palm oil specialist at the Zoological Society of London, ZSL, about the results of the recently published Spot Survey Assessment into deforestation and conservation commitments at the 100 top palm oil producers, processors and traders. The good news is that companies are making progress, but not fast enough, as Eleanor explained to me. However, that's to come. First is some sustainable business news. Acting because of pressure from investors, US oil giant ExxonMobil has reported its Scope 3 emissions for the first time. For Exxon, Scope 3 emissions include those resulting from the company's customers' use of its products, and were equivalent to 730 million tonnes of CO2 in 2019, which is more than other big oil companies that have reported. The company downplayed the significance of Scope 3, saying that these emissions do not provide a meaningful insight into the company's pollution reduction performance. However, climate activists point out that it has taken significant pressure to get ExxonMobil to this point, when many other sectors have moved beyond simply reporting Scope 3 emissions to thinking about how to reduce them. Investors need to do more to consider the risks of backing the companies behind plastics, according to a new research from Portfolio Earth. The NGO says that 265 major banks provide $790 million every day to 40 plastics value chain companies, and claims that the banks, including the likes of HSBC, JP Morgan Chase, Barclays, Bank of America and other big names, fail to apply environmental conditions to loans and financing. This is despite progress in excluding finance for fossil fuel projects or those with deforestation risks. Portfolio Earth is not calling for divestment from plastics, rather a greater focus for investors to finance reusable products and recycled content and move away from single-use plastics in general. The COVID-19 pandemic has, of course, knocked progress on single-use plastic use in particular, with the inevitable widespread use of PPE, face shields and gloves in healthcare settings. The UK government is to tighten laws on importing goods with links to forced labour and other human rights abuses in China's Xinjiang province, specifically involving the region's Muslim populations. There have been a number of reports that minority groups had been targeted by the authorities in the region and forced into labour camps and factories manufacturing goods and textiles and ending up in Western markets. Forced labour watchers speculate that the UK's move will involve expansion of the Modern Slavery Act's provisions. The UK's Marks & Spencer chain had previously pledged to cut ties with suppliers in China that were linked to the forced labour camps. The US Centre for Global Policy has said that 570,000 people were forced to hand-pick cotton in Xinjiang. The UN estimates that up to 1 million from minority groups have been detained. The Chinese authorities say that the camps offer vocational training and help to fight terrorism and extremism. The rise and rise of alternative foods and protein in particular seems irresistible. The latest to attract multi-million dollar investment is California-based Air Protein, which is creating processes to literally grow protein from elements in the air. Developing NASA space program technology, Air Protein uses carbon from atmospheric carbon dioxide to feed microbes in a probiotic process in fermentation vessels that eventually results in the creation of a protein flour in a matter of hours. The company says its process is hugely scalable and entirely sustainable. One to watch perhaps, but certainly indicative of the exciting innovation going on in the food sector right now. Details of Innovation Forum's spring conference programme continue to be announced. The Future of Food US event will be held online over the 23rd to 25th of March on Central North America time. Already confirmed as panellists are leading practitioners from Danone, Kellogg, Oatly, Impossible Foods, PepsiCo, Bunge and Yum Brands. Registration for tickets is now open, and you can save $150 on tickets if you register by the 22nd of January. This year's Sustainable Apparel and Textiles Conference will be from the 27th to 29th of April, and if you want to join the 200 plus participants and hear from more than 60 expert speakers, then you can sign up by the 22nd of January and save £150 on events passes. Our new Climate Innovation Forum will be on the 25th to 27th of May. You can hear from experts at Schneider Electric, Novozymes, Reckitt Benckiser, Walgreens Boots Alliance and many more. And the Future of Food Europe event is to be held from the 15th to 17th of June. Full details on innovationforum.co.uk and register now to save £200 on conference passes. Do also check out the report from Innovation Forum's Innovation Accelerator Group, focusing on building resilient smallholder supply chains. You can download for free from the Innovation Forum website. A few days ago, I spoke with ZSL's Eleanor Spencer about the latest Spot research into the performance of the top 100 palm oil sector businesses. 2020, of course, should have been a big year for many companies with zero deforestation targets due and then missed. Progress has been made, however, as Eleanor highlights. ZSL, Zoological Society of London, has recently released its latest survey into the palm oil sector. Why don't you give us a bit of background to the survey, how long it's been going and what it was established to do?
So Spot is an initiative of ZSL, the Zoological Society of London, and we set Spot up back in 2014. Originally, we were just covering the palm oil sector, although we have since expanded to cover the tropical forestry and natural rubber sectors as well. Essentially, the main focus of Spot is on the transparency and the strength of company commitments and reporting on key sustainability issues in these forest risk commodity sectors. We do this for annual assessments. So in the palm oil sector, we provide an annual assessment of what we consider to be 100 of the most significant upstream palm oil companies, producers, processors, and some traders. And we look at their publicly available disclosure and we assess that against 180 different indicators across 10 categories of environmental, social and governance issues. So, for instance, we would look at whether a company has a commitment to zero deforestation, to zero burning, to protecting human rights, for example. But then we'll also look into the details of those commitments. So we will look at the scope of them, whether they cover all suppliers. We will look at whether they have time-bound plans, for example, whether they have targets and that kind of thing, as well as looking then at how the company reports that it is implementing that commitment. So if it has a zero deforestation commitment, does it report how it is monitoring deforestation? And we provide all of that data online. The main aim essentially is to facilitate a kind of nuanced and constructive conversation between those companies and their key stakeholders, whether that be their investors, their banks, or their sort of major buyers downstream. Transparency is really this step towards sustainability. So if we don't know where companies are operating, what they're doing, what land they have control over, or what commitments they have in place, then it's very difficult to start that dialogue. We provide that data in order to facilitate that conversation, really, as a first step.
So what were the headlines from the 2020 Spot assessment?
So we released that back in November of 2020, and the average score this year we've seen has increased slightly from last year. It's gone up to 42% compared to 35%. So that's across those 100 palm oil companies that we assess, which is definitely an improvement and very positive to see, but of course is overall quite disappointing at this stage to be seeing an average score of 42% across those major companies. And it's quite a range, you know, some are scoring more in 78 to 80%, but quite a lot are still scoring zero. So there's a lot of work to be done. And of course, 2020 was this big target year for a lot of company commitments on zero deforestation, particularly, as well as broader sector commitments, such as the Consumer Goods Forum pledge and the New York Declaration on Forests commitments. So we were looking particularly at the progress there. And an encouraging thing that we found is that a lot of companies do have these zero deforestation commitments in place now. Around about 71% of the companies that we assessed had what we consider a clear and robust commitment to zero deforestation. But when we then look at reporting on the implementation of that commitment, it's much lower. So we found only 42% of companies reported detailed information on how they are then monitoring deforestation, in their own supply chain. When we look at suppliers, that's worse. It's only 10% we found were monitoring it in their supplier operations as well.
You mentioned that the average score was 42%. What does 42% mean?
So that's across those 100 companies, looking at 180 indicators on Spot for each of those companies. We came up with that score. So, you know, we look at different things. We look at whether the policy's there and we look at the details of the policy. Each indicator is usually scored out of a total of one. And then we calculate across all of those to come up with a final score for each company. An average that was 42%. So it shows, as I said, there's a huge range. So some of those are scoring nothing, some of them are scoring very highly. It kind of shows that range, but it's not good enough really at this point.
Sure.
You know, in 2020.
So the average across the companies then, 42% score on the indicators is the average score. Can you name some of the leaders and laggards then? Who are the companies that we're going to have heard of that are doing well or doing badly?
We tend not to kind of pick out on particular companies. There aren't particularly surprises at the top of the table. It's the kind of companies that we usually see, particularly some of the larger ones that have these kind of commitments in place already and have done for some time or a bit further on in that journey. But we are increasingly seeing companies that previously have not engaged with us or have not really engaged with sustainability reporting generally improving their scores here. So we have seen a lot more engagement from those sort of more mid or lower scoring companies this year, and hope to keep seeing that trend continue.
What characterises the companies then that are at the end, the ones that are scoring zero?
Quite a range of different companies done it. Often I think we find that companies, they might be quite large companies, but if palm oil isn't the focus of their business, or if it's only one of several different sectors that the company is operating in, then it might receive less attention, perhaps because that company doesn't get the same kind of targeted scrutiny and campaigning or investor interest, for example, on palm oil specifically. We see, I guess, the further downstream you go as well, that generally scores are slightly lower. We assess producers, processors and traders, and a lot of those are integrated across all those sectors. But for companies that are, for instance, only traders or only own a refinery, we might see lower scores generally there. I think, you know, the more removed you are from that on the ground plantation side of it, I think scores are lower.
You mentioned earlier that 2020 was, of course, a deadline for net deforestation for many companies with palm oil supply chains. Did you notice a noticeable difference, a kind of jump last year then in improvements?
I wouldn't say that we've seen a huge jump from 2019 to 2020, particularly that the overall kind of category score for those deforestation indicators has improved, but I wouldn't say it's significant. The trend is more significant if you look over that last decade. We've definitely seen more and more companies putting these NDP, these no deforestation, peat or exploitation commitments in place. And I'm sure that the urgency of that has increased a bit as we come towards this 2020 deadline. But I think it's been the putting in place of commitments has kind of built up over the last few years, really, I'd say.
Thinking in terms of the way that companies are acting then, how do you characterise best practice in the palm oil sector now?
So best practices are extensive. Obviously, it depends very much which issues we're talking about. But I think a good way that companies can make sure that they are working towards best practices across all kinds of aspects of their operations is by pursuing RSPO certification, for example, and by meeting the principles and criteria, particularly now that they've been updated and improved in 2018. Companies will be putting a lot of those established best practices in place by doing that, as well as by kind of engaging with the RSPO, they're making sure they're taking part in that kind of dialogue to try and keep improving and pushing the industry forward. I guess as a minimum, all companies should have these NDP policies in place. They should be clear and transparent and robust. And as I've said, we are seeing generally that a lot of companies that now have those commitments in place, but the focus crucially should be on working to ensure that those commitments are then being implemented, not just in a company's own operations, but those of its suppliers. In general, we need to see more of a shift from perhaps a slightly more reactive approach that we're seeing at the moment to problems in the supply chain or non-compliances with policies, to a much more proactive and preventative approach where companies are kind of really making sure that to implement that commitment, they know where all their suppliers are, they're communicating clearly and regularly with all those suppliers, and they're making sure the right procedures and monitoring are in place so that those problems don't occur. Because of course, by the time you detect a problem with a supplier or non-compliance, whether it's deforestation or human rights abuses, then by definition, it's already too late, really.
To come back to something we touched on a little earlier, the fact that so many of the large, particularly consumer-facing companies have made so many commitments on palm oil, and then that inevitably feeds down through the supply chain. So how has your research indicated that, or how has your research shown that the sort of likes of Nestle's, Unilever's, who've made all these commitments, but then they have to get their supply chains to meet them? How has your survey tracked that over the last decade?
Of course, we don't track those companies downstream themselves and track the commitments that they have, but certainly we're tracking a lot of their key buyers. And I think the ones that we see with the stronger commitments in place and that have had reporting commitments in place perhaps for the longer time, generally those kind of big companies that some of those big downstream players that you mentioned will certainly be sourcing from. So I think indirectly, we're certainly seeing the effect of that pressure from downstream, and through our conversations both with the companies we assess and with some of those downstream companies, we know that those conversations are going on behind closed doors and that they are using data sets like ours in many cases to increase that dialogue, to push for better reporting and policies to be in place. I wouldn't say we track it directly with the data that we have, but I think it's clear that those are the trends that are kind of going on. What we'd obviously like to see is more of those kind of downstream companies that aren't currently engaged in sustainability that aren't necessarily the big names that we all hear about. To really bring more of those companies upstream on board, I think we need to see much more of the downstream sector becoming engaged with this.
One of the big themes that we saw in 2020 was a sense that the investment community getting more and more involved in using ESG criteria when making its portfolio decisions. Is that something that you're seeing in your survey?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, not something that we directly measure, but certainly through our engagements with the companies and with their stakeholders, we're seeing that trend increasing each year. We attempt to engage with all of the companies that we assess every year. We usually talk to about half of them in detail about their assessments. And through those conversations, it's apparent that a lot of them have been encouraged to speak with us and to improve their transparency generally by their investors or by their kind of C-suite execs that are clearly getting pressure from investors and other key stakeholders. So we're certainly seeing that. We've worked a bit to support the PRI Palm Oil Investor Working Group, for example, in their kind of collective engagement with palm oil companies. And initiatives like that, I think, are going to be really key going forward to make sure that investor pressure makes a difference. But quite often, some of these large investors, they might have a significant stake in a company, but it still individually only amounts to maybe 1 or 2%. Whereas if we see these collective actions and the same message being pushed by a lot of different investors at once, I think we'll see much more change.
In closing then, a couple of questions related. What do you hope you're going to see in the 2021 assessment at the end of the year? And then what do you expect to see?
Well, I'd hope that what I hope and expect would be roughly aligned. I think that we will see more and more companies that are currently kind of lower or mid-scoring in our assessment ranking, scoring higher and engaging with us more. We've had several companies engage with us for the first time this year that quite quickly saw an increase in their score. You know, in a lot of cases, the information is there, it's just not been made publicly available. A lot of companies have internal policies that they're just not aware exactly how they need to be public about it and how they can communicate it. So I hope that we can see more of a rapid increase for some of those kind of mid and low scoring companies. And I would hope also, now that the 2020 deadline has passed and we've clearly missed it, I would hope to see a real ramping up from all companies, whether they're higher or lower scoring, on that implementation side of these commitments. We know that most of the commitments are there, but it's not clear how much they're being implemented. I'd hope that those two things together, by seeing more companies paying attention to their disclosure generally and more kind of actions following words, that we'll see more progress towards the 2020 goal, even if it is later than it should have been.
Given, as you say, that by and large 2020 deadlines were missed, it's going to be interesting to see how businesses react. Do they create another set of deadlines with the risk of missing them as well? Or how are they going to approach that realistically? It'll be interesting to see for sure. But for now, Eleanor from ZSL, thank you very much indeed.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And as ever, look out at innovationforum.co.uk for all the usual audio interviews and insights, including a preview this week of what's coming up for Innovation Forum in 2021. But that's all for now. I've been Ian Welsh, and I'll be back next week.